The area I'm going to discuss is the area of Teramada, which is an area that's very negev zman hazeh, more than it ever was until rather recently in our history. It's an area I just want to start off by mentioning.
Perhaps I mentioned it last week, but I feel it's extremely important, and that's why, at the risk of being repetitive, I will go over it once more. The Rambam says that kol machshava shu gorem lo lo avodas kachav lo varu shu asal hi fanas acharav machshava la kol machshava shu gorem lo lo odom laakor ikr me ikri atorah muzhoren anu shelo lahalos al libenu v'lo nasiach daitenu lakach v'nachsho v'nimshach achar huri alev m'nei shel daito shel odom kitzora v'lo kol hadeos yuchol m'hasig v'emes al buryo. So he says, and if a person, in other words, what Rambam says like this, he says, not only avodah zarah, but any idea which causes a person to uproot one of the fundamentals of Torah, we are warned, it is prohibited for us to entertain such a thought or to direct our minds to such a thought and to follow it and to follow the feelings or the imagination or the tendencies of our heart. Why? Because a person's mind is small, and not every mind is capable of understanding the truth soundly. And if every person will turn after his own thoughts, so what will result is that the world will be destroyed according to the limitations of his mind. How? For instance, sometimes he will start entertaining thoughts of avodah zarah. Sometimes he will think about the oneness of God. Maybe he is one, maybe he isn't. Then he'll go into questions of what existed before the universe and what will exist after the universe. And sometimes he will question nevuah, prophecy. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Sometimes even Torah itself. Was Torah given by God at Sinai? Was there revelation? Maybe there wasn't. He says, and the person doesn't know the methods of analysis in order that he may be able to arrive at the truth soundly. And therefore, what will result is that he will become an apostate. All right? That's why the Torah says, V'lo sasurach relevavchem v'achare enechem asher atem zonim. Klomar, what it means is, each one of you should not follow or be drawn after his limited mind, his limited intellect, and he should not imagine that his thoughts understand the truth. Okay? And that's what the Chum said, Achrei v'losurcha levavchem zuminus, achrei enechem zuznus, v'lav zeh, and this love, even though it causes a person to lose his part in the world to come, there is no malchus because there is no maaser. Okay, because that's a separate thing with Allah phenomena. You can't have malchus without a maaser. But as we mentioned last week, the Rambam is not against philosophical speculation, as is obvious from his works in the guide in the Morne Buchim, where the Rambam shows and demonstrates the basic philosophical premises of Yadus. But what I explained in the Rambam was that the Rambam is speaking about a certain type of investigation. And the type of investigation that the Rambam is discussing is the intuitive, you see. That's why the Rambam mentions not to turn after your hearts. What does it mean? Of course, the proof of Torah Misinai, to understand that Torah was given Misinai, is extremely important. As a matter of fact, the Ramban says it's one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Mm-hmm. That a person should understand. Now, how could a person possibly study this concept if he's not going to entertain both sides of the question? It's an impossibility. It's a logical impossibility. A person has to entertain both sides of the question in order to study the proof. It's impossible to study the proof otherwise. So what I said was that what the Ramban means over here is not, he is not discussing he's not discussing knowledge of Torah Misinai. Knowledge of Torah Misinai is incumbent upon all of us. But the knowledge must proceed in accordance with the rational, in accordance with the rational principle that exists in each and every one of us and that was given to us by God, which makes us unique, the fact that we have the ability to perceive reality and to follow that part of us which is our mind. But there's another type of thinking that a person does, which is completely usur, which means a person will sit down and will say, let me see, does it make sense that Torah is min ha-shamayim? Does that make sense that there was actually a revelation? I mean, we don't see any miracles occurring recently, so this thing sounds strange to me, therefore I will reject it. Which means to say that a person will make decisions based upon his own intuition. That type of thinking is a lav of the Torah. That's where the lav comes in. Which means that a person will attempt to establish, it goes even further, of course. It means a person will attempt to establish what is philosophically real based upon what seems to him as sensible. That is the lav meraisa. For instance, you know that among the Yesodei Hados, among the 13 principles of Yadus, is the belief in Bias HaMashiach. Okay? In Bias HaMashiach. Which means to say that in the future, an individual will arise who will change the entire world, the entire world order, and will lead man to a knowledge and understanding of God, which will be prevalent not only among the Jews, but among the entire world. Now, a person will say, well, look, it doesn't seem probable that such a thing will occur. Say, to me. It doesn't seem probable to me. That would be an Issa D'Raisa. That would be L'Sorcha L'Vavcha L'Achreinechem. He's going after Kotzer Daito, after his limited knowledge. Similarly, the belief in Tchias HaNesem, I mean, it's one of the Yesodei Hados that there will be a time when the dead will be resurrected. Now, if a person will simply think to himself, well, is this a probable type of thing? You see, that is a law of Midaraisa. Why? Because our concept of probability, our intuition, what we call our intuition, is not a very sturdy method of arriving at the truth. Because that which is intuitive to us is nothing more than that which we are used to. We have a tendency to accept as probable that which we are used to. So that if a person lives during a certain time when there are no miracles, some miracles will seem to him as something which is absurd and impossible. Whereas if a person would live during a time when God saw fit to perform miracles, to him it will not seem absurd. So that it would come out that a man existing during certain centuries, because of the time that he exists, certain things to him will seem probable that will not seem probable to another individual. Now, we are not permitted to decide what reality is based on probability. As a matter of fact, I would repeat what I one time mentioned about the concept of the difference between three different views. One view which is perhaps even a religious view, which is erroneous, but which again is based upon a person's feelings. The view that a person feels intuitively that God is very much directly involved with him, and that he senses somehow or other that he is at the center of the universe and the center of God's thoughts, which David HaMelech says is false, because David HaMelech says on the contrary, Mo enosh kisis kireno, that's only a very small person thinks that way. But a person that studies knowledge of the universe gets the opposite feeling, that man's affairs are very small in terms of the whole of knowledge. And therefore, he often concludes, as many scientists conclude, I mean, Einstein was perhaps the greatest scientist, and Einstein had a deep and abiding belief in the Creator. But nevertheless,
it seemed to him absurd that God should be involved in human affairs. Because of his great knowledge, it seemed that human affairs are too small for God to be involved with. And this same sentiment is expressed by David HaMelech when he says, Mo enosh ki siskereno, ki era shemecha maisei etzbaosecha, when I look at the heavens and I study your works, so I feel Mo enosh ki siskereno, what is man that God should be involved with his affairs? That's a legitimate... it's a legitimate feeling. It's a legitimate intuition. Nevertheless, it's not true. Nevertheless, it's not true. Because the Masorah teaches us that God is involved in human affairs. However, we cannot... the fact that God is involved in human affairs must remain to us an abstract truth. Not one with which is in line with our feelings. Because the feelings in favor of that mostly... are certain egocentric feelings, which again do not tell us reality, but which again are nothing more than our own emotions. And we cannot allow our emotions to be that which determines what reality is. That's what Yahadis demands of us, basically. That we cannot allow our emotions to be the determinants of what we conclude to be reality. There's only one area from which we can gain knowledge into reality, and that is from the Tzelem Elokim, that part of man which is divine and which can perceive Chachmas Hashem. Now that area itself is itself a very subtle type of thing. What area comes from Tzelem Elokim? What area doesn't? The Rambam mentions it, speaks about it in the Mora. The Rambam is in the guide. It's in the first part of the guide, where he talks about it's under the Kalim. Kalim are a group of philosophers that the Rambam discusses their philosophy. Now the Rambam says like this: the Rambam it's under the 10th proposition. It's in on page 129 in the paperback edition of the Rambam. He says like this. He says, hear what profit we derive from the preliminary disciplines, and how excellent the propositions are which we learn through them. So the Rambam mentioned before, he says, nor can imagination in any way obtain a purely immaterial image of an object, however abstract the form of the image may be. Imagination yields therefore no test for the reality of a thing. And the Rambam gives an example, which today, of course, it's not as easy to see what he means by the example. I think if you could just reflect back a little bit and remove some of the things that you used to, I think it's an excellent example. The Rambam says like this. He says, know that there are certain things which would appear impossible if tested by man's imagination, being as inconceivable as the coexistence of two opposite properties in one object. All right, which means to say that an object is hot and cold at the same time, for instance. He says, yet the existence of those same things, which cannot be represented by imagination, is nevertheless established by proof and attested by their reality. Okay? What he's saying is that even though something would seem to us to be impossible through the faculty of our imagination, yet reality tells us to be that it is true. And he gives an example. He says, imagine a large globe of any magnitude you like, even as large as the all-encompassing sphere. Further, that all-encompassing sphere is a part of the ancient astronomy. Further, an axis passing through the center and two persons standing on the two extremities of the axis in such a manner that their feet are in the same straight line with the axis, which may be either in the plane of the horizon or not. In the first case, both persons would fall. In the second case, one, namely the one who stands on the lower extremity, would fall. The other would remain standing, as far as our imagination can perceive. In other words, we have a globe, and you have two people standing this way. So one would imagine they would both fall. If the globe is circular and one is on top and one is on the bottom, so you'd imagine the bottom one would fall, but the top one wouldn't. Okay?
It has, however, already been proved that the earth has the form of a globe, that it is inhabited on both extremities of a certain diameter, that both the inhabitants have their heads towards the heaven and their legs towards each other, and yet neither can possibly fall, nor can it be imagined. For it is incorrect to say that the one extremity is above, the other below. But the term above and below applied to both of them as regards their relative position to each other. Okay? So the Rambam, of course, is giving a simple example, but the example is a very good one. If you would imagine, of course, now every schoolboy knows that the earth is a globe and there's no problem. But if a person did not have that knowledge, he would be convinced just existing. If his knowledge was limited, he just existed in one part of the globe, he would have a sense that things fall down to the fall down towards Earth. He would not be able to imagine a globe in which people don't fall off the other side. See, today it's difficult to imagine otherwise. Of course, anything, as I said before, anything that you're trained from youth to accept as reality, you don't have any problem with the imagination. However, you can see very clearly that if you didn't have that knowledge, this would be the most natural thing for a person to assume to be correct. So that, as I mentioned before, the imagination, what we sense as likely and probable, is nothing more than a product of what we have been exposed to. You see, and that gives us a certain sense of reality. That sense of reality is what the Rambam always calls the imagination, and which the average person uses to determine what reality is, and which the Torah informs us that we are not permitted to use that sense, because that sense does not determine reality. Again, the Rambam goes on and speaks about mathematics. He says, similarly, it has been proved in the second chapter of the book on conic sections that two lines, which at first are at a certain distance from each other, may approach each other in the same proportion as they are produced further, and yet would never meet, even if they are produced to infinity, although they are observed to be constantly converging. This is a fact which cannot easily be conceived and which does not come within the scope of imagination. Okay? So there, the Rambam mentions that certain things which are proven mathematically as being correct, yet the imagination somehow or other can't possibly accept them. All right? Okay, now he says like this. It has thus been clearly shown that in man exists a certain faculty which is entirely distinct from imagination, and by which the necessary, the possible, and the impossible can be distinguished from each other. This inquiry is most useful. It is of the greatest profit to him who desires to guard himself against the errors of men guided by imagination. Okay. Now he says like this. He says, consider, O reader, and bear in mind that this requires deep research. For there are certain notions which some believe to be founded on reason, while others regard them as mere fictions. In such cases, it would be necessary to find something that could show the difference between conceptions of the intellect and mere imaginary fancies. When the philosopher, in his way of expressing himself, contends reality is my evidence, by its guidance I examine whether a thing is necessary, possible, or impossible, the religionist replies, this is exactly the difference between us. That which actually exists has, according to my view, been produced by the will of the Creator, not by necessity. Okay, that's a separate point. But it's like this. Getting back to the idea that he mentioned about imagination, it's like this. About this admissibility of imaginable things, I shall have more to say, and I shall return to it in various parts of this treatise. For it is not a subject which should be rejected in haste and on the spur of the moment. And the Rambam does return to it in many, many places. I'd just like to point out a few. I think it's important because I think that this has very much to do with some of the most basic principles of Yahadus. The Rambam says like this. This is in chapter 15 in the third section of the Rambam. He says, again he says, while philosophers say that it is impossible to produce a square with a diagonal equal to one of the sides, or a solid angle that includes four right angles, or similar things, it is thought possible by some persons who are ignorant of mathematics and who only know the words of these propositions but have no idea of that which is expressed by them. Of course, the Rambam is speaking of the mathematics of his time. Now, I wonder, he says, whether this gate of research is open so that all may freely enter, and whilst one imagines a thing and considers it possible, another is at liberty to assert that such a thing is impossible by its very nature. Or whether the gate is closed and guarded by certain rules, so that we are able to decide with certainty whether a thing is physically impossible. Interesting, very interesting part of the Mara. In other words, the Rambam here really is anticipating some of the basic problems that confronted modern physics, in the especially in the change from the Newtonian system to the Einsteinian system of physics. Very extremely interesting. So like this. I should also like to know, in the latter case, whether imagination or reason has to examine and test objects as to their being possible or not. Likewise, how things imagined and things conceived intellectually are to be distinguished from each other. How do you distinguish between something that's conceived by the imagination or something that's conceived by the intellect? Okay, in modern physics, in terms of modern physics, the question of light as a particle or light as a wave is one of those things precisely that the physicists were involved in. And the early approach was really an attempt to understand these phenomena in terms of some type of time and space reality that a person is used to. And therefore, many problems resulted. And this was precisely the problem that faced the physicists of our generation, basically, within the last 100 years, I'd say, last century, from the time of the turn of the century. He says like this. The Rambam, it's interesting, the Rambam anticipated some of these problems. But, of course, in his time, he simply didn't have the physics. As the Rambam mentions certain things, like he said that some people criticize Chazal on their astronomy. He says you have to know that the astronomy that Chazal discuss wasn't given to them at Sinai, but basically they were discussing the ideas of astronomy that they had learned in their time. And the science wasn't as developed then as it was in the time of the Rambam, just like it wasn't as developed in the time of the Rambam as it is today. Now, the Rambam says as follows. He says, for it occurs that we consider a thing as physically possible, and then someone objects, or we ourselves fear that our opinion is only the result of imagination and not that of reason. In such a case, it would be desirable to ascertain whether there exists some faculty to distinguish between imagination and intellect. And if so, whether this faculty is different from both, okay, or whether it is part of the intellect itself, to distinguish between intellectual and imaginary objects. All this requires investigation, but it does not belong to the theme of this chapter. He says, okay, we have thus shown, you see, the Rambam already anticipated the question. The most basic question in modern physics, whether man can construe, the question is what, in our understanding of nature and reality, what part of it is really merely stems from imagination, which means from the fact that we wish to understand and interpret things the way we are used to, and what part stems from the intellect alone. Of course, the view of modern physics is that the only part of man that is legitimately associated with reality is it boils down basically to the mathematical descriptions. Only mathematical description is possible of reality, but nothing else. Any other description is pure imagination. The Rambam already noticed the problem, you see. A lot of people misunderstand the Rambam. They consider the Rambam to be an Aristotelian. But the Rambam was really not, and they consider him to be an apologete. He was not, the Mora is not an apologetic work at all. On the contrary, in the very next chapter, the Rambam speaks about the philosophers, and he doesn't show any deference to them whatsoever. He says, with regard to the basic ideas of God, the Rambam mentions in chapter 16, the philosophers have uttered very perverse ideas as regards God's omniscience of everything, God's omniscience of everything beside himself. They have stumbled in such a manner that they cannot rise again, nor can those who adopt their views. I will further on tell you the doubts that led them to these perverse utterances on this question. And I will tell you the opinion which is taught by our religion and which differs from the evil and wrong principles of the philosophers as regards God's omniscience. Okay? The Rambam realized, you see, and this is what I'm trying to say basically, that we, in receiving Torah from Sinai, are the guardians of a very specific type of philosophy and a very specific type of metaphysic. And we cannot be swayed by the attitudes of the philosophers at any given point in history, for the simple reason that our philosophy is based on underlying realities which are the ultimate knowledge that man is capable of in relationship to metaphysics. And you have to realize that the world, going through different stages of knowledge, even the greatest minds, even an Aristotle, even a Newton, even an Einstein, will have to go through many different stages. And to stop at any stage and to say that this seems to me to be correct based upon our knowledge and our sense is completely erroneous, because to do so would be to be guided by the imagination. As I mentioned before, imagination is something which appears to us to be correct based upon what we observe. A famous example is given of a chicken that universalizes, and whenever he sees the farmer, he always assumes that he's going to be fed, until the final day when the farmer approaches him in order to take him to the market. So you see, but to that chicken in his framework, every time he sees the farmer, he associates it, and it seems rational, so to speak, that this is what the type of experience he is about to observe. But due to his limitation, he is bound one day to make a serious error. Man finds himself in the same type of situation if he uses his imagination. Nevertheless, it should be made clear that Torah does not maintain that man should abandon his intellect. Far from it. Man should not abandon his intellect. The only thing is that man must be very cautious with his intellect and realize that he can only be very cautious in using his intellect, and realize that he can only use it in the area which is legitimatized, you see. And that's where the Masorah comes into play. See, that's where the Masorah comes into play. As I mentioned before, when I said that the Rambam is not an apologist, even with regard to astronomy, the Rambam criticizes Aristotle. And the Rambam mentions that which Aristotle says about the heavens, very interesting statement that happens to be the Rambam mentions. The Rambam says that where Aristotle mentions concepts about astronomy, so the Rambam says that most of his ideas in that area are completely based upon nothing more than imagination.
Okay. Just a second. Let me just. I want to read it to you because I think it's important. Yeah. Ramsay, yes. The Rambam is in. It's in the second book. It's in chapter 22. The Rambam says like this.
How was Abraham able
to? This is one thing. I'll answer your question. Just let me first finish that. So like this. The Rambam says in chapter 22 of the second book, the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says, but what Aristotle says, what Aristotle says concerning things which he was able to observe. Namely the physical world, he says, those things are rational. But what Aristotle says concerning things above the sphere of the moon, meaning in the heavens, is, with few exceptions, mere imagination and opinion. That's what the Rambam says. Okay? To a still greater extent, this applies to a system of intelligences and to some of his metaphysical views. They include great improbabilities, promote ideas which all nations consider as evidently corrupt, and cause views to spread which cannot be proved. What the Rambam means by corrupt is means it goes against the basic principles of Yadus. That's what the Rambam means. So, the Rambam accepted Aristotle was merely trying to apply Aristotelian philosophy to Yadus is completely erroneous, if you examine his works carefully. Completely erroneous. The Rambam stood very steadfast with only one thing. The basic principles of Yadus, those ideas which he was able to glean from the system of Torah, and he was very careful and very cautious to guard those ideas against any type of views which were based upon what man thinks or considers to be probable in reality. You see, because that is the way the Rambam describes love. Okay. Chapter 24, the Rambam continues the same manner. He says, but of the things in the heavens, man knows nothing except a few mathematical calculations, and you see how far these go. Okay, and meaning to say that they don't go very far in ascertaining reality. I say in the words of the poet, the heavens are the Lord's, but the earth he has given to the sons of man. That is to say, God alone has a perfect and true knowledge of the heavens, their nature, their essence, their form, their motions, and their causes. But he gave man power to know the things which are under the heavens. Here is man's world. Here is his home, into which he has been placed, and of which he is himself a portion. This is in reality the truth. For the facts which we require in proving the existence of heavenly beings are withheld from us. The heavens are too far from us and too exalted in place and rank. Man's faculties are too deficient to comprehend even the general proof the heavens contain for the existence of him who set them in motion. It is in fact ignorance or a kind of madness to weary our minds with finding out things which are beyond our reach, without having the means of approaching them. We must content ourselves with that which is within our reach, and that which cannot be approached by logical inference, let us leave to him who has been endowed with the great and divine influence expressed in the words, mouth to mouth do I speak with him, meaning to say that Moshe Rabbeinu had such a knowledge. This is all I can say on this question. Another person may perhaps be able to establish by proof what appears doubtful to me. It is on account of my great love of truth that I have shown my embarrassment in these matters, and I have not heard, nor do I know, that any of these theories have been established by proof. Okay. So the Rambam sensed, it's an interesting thing, but the Rambam sensed from his metaphysical position, which he derived from Yadus, he sensed a tremendous lack somehow or other. You see the way he formulates it, that there's an inherent lack in man in being able to understand really the basic realia, the basic realities which underlie the world that appears to us. You see, now it's very interesting, but the I have a very similar quote. As a matter of fact, it's basically the essence of this this book, which was written by Sir James Jeans on physics and philosophy, in which he expresses and explains how the same basic idea that modern science basically showed man that his most basic way of understanding things are completely impossible, and that understanding the world through the senses becomes a totally impossible undertaking. Yeah. Now, let me just... I just can't find exactly what it says. It mentions it in many places, but here's one place. It says, we have seen that efforts to discover the true nature of reality are necessarily doomed to failure. So that if we are to progress further, it must be by taking some other objective and utilizing some new philosophical principles of which we have not so far made use of. What he's showing is that in the light of modern physics, there is no way that we can conceive of what the ultimate realities are in nature. As a matter of fact, whatever we study, we're only studying our knowledge of, like for instance, if we use wave mechanics, we're only studying wave mechanics and not underlying realities. They're only something within us which parallels nature, so that we're studying our own knowledge of nature rather than nature itself. The underlying realities of nature are forever hidden from us simply because our senses aren't capable of perceiving them. And what we perceive through our senses are only accidents or offshoots of basic physical phenomena. So that he says that certain knowledge is beyond our reach, and certain knowledge of reality is basically beyond our reach. And that's basically the conclusion of modern physics, because once you remove all type of sense perception, so you have nothing with which to go by to determine what reality is based upon the view of reality that your senses have presented to you. The only thing your senses can do is they can be aware of certain phenomena that strike them. But even that study of how phenomena are involved with your senses, it even gets more complicated, because the point is, whenever you make an experiment in certain subatomic particles, certain subatomic phenomena, what happens is the experiment itself affects the phenomena, so that what you're studying, you cannot remove yourself as an observer from the whole of nature. And it comes out that as an observer, your observation itself is linked with that which you are studying itself. But at any rate, without going into the... Yes?
The point you made...
You're right.
The argument
exactly.
that you raised with regard to...
But the point is that the concept of our intuition is always limited. That's why I mentioned before that for a person to reason in the sense that is it probable to me that there will be a Trias HaMason is precisely the type of reasoning which would be prohibited, because that reasoning is dependent upon what is probable in relationship to God's actions. Now, a human being cannot arrive at such a conclusion based upon what he experiences during his short lifespan. The only way to arrive at such a conclusion would be if he would have a total knowledge of everything, including God, which is, from his particular standpoint in history, impossible. So that what he considers probable in regard to Trias HaMason or the principles of our religion would be based erroneously on his limited exposure. Now, in science, as each generation progresses and the scientists are exposed to a different scientific milieu, a different environment, their ideas are in line with that environment, because man can adapt that part of his mind to his specific age, to the time that he lives in. But it's not a tool that is permitted to be used with regard to absolute knowledge insofar as God is concerned or insofar as the basic principle of Yadis are concerned. Perhaps man will at one point arrive at an intuition
which will, that's what the Rambam says, he doesn't know if there is such a thing. The Rambam leaves it as an open question in the Mora. Will man ever arrive? Will there ever be a time for man where he will be so developed intuitively that his intuition will be in line with all the principles of Yudgimli Karim? I mean, will there be such a time? The Rambam leaves it as an open question. He doesn't know, you see. But certainly, meanwhile, during the progressive states of humanity, it is prohibited for us to make any judgments. A physicist, it is permitted for a physicist to make judgments based upon how he views reality, because he's involved in a certain time in history, and that's the only way progress can take place. But insofar as the absolutes of our faith, we can't do such a thing. And as a matter of fact, the insofar as I'm concerned, the greatest part of the Mora Nevuchim, which shows you the Rambam's great depth, was that he was able to remove himself from his environment and from the scientific ideas of his time when it came to the Yesodei Hadas. And he made this clear-cut distinction that science develops over many years and in successive generations, and things which seem absurd at one time become, on the contrary, something which is acceptable at another time. So that the intuition, the scientific intuition, grows as man progresses. That's true. But we cannot, we are not permitted to use intuition, you see, to determine the basics which have to do with God's knowledge, which is an ultimate type of knowledge. We are not permitted to use that type of intuition in determining what the principles of Yadis are, or whether they're correct or whether they're not, because they inherently have to be limited to their time and their place. Yes?
Good question.
The Yesodei Hadas are not just open. The Balei HaMasorah, when God gave the Torah, the system of Torah, the system of the Masorah, it's a very intricate system which was very well kept. As anyone who knows Halacha, who studies Halacha, knows and sees the in-depth of the science of Halacha, which is an abstract science in the highest form. And I'd like to just mention that as I mentioned many times before, that the Rav has mentioned oftentimes, and it's something which it sounds like a boasting, but it isn't for those who have studied the area. But the abstract ideas that are found in, for instance, in concepts in halacha and halachic concepts are of the highest nature, even more advanced, even more advanced in abstract thought than scientific knowledge. The Rav has mentioned this many times. The abstractness in Rav Chaim is way above, as the Rav said, head and shoulders over the most abstract thought in Immanuel Kant. And this is not a question of attempting to say that Torah is superior, but those who have knowledge of Torah know what it means. It's difficult to convey if you didn't study the areas. But the Rambam, for instance, mentions that in Hilchas Tumah V'Tahara, Taharis is the most abstract area of halacha. We don't study too much Taharis today, maybe for that reason. But Taharis is the most abstract area of halacha. And the Rambam mentions that even Nevi'im, when it came to certain areas in Taharis, were unable to perceive accurately what the abstract formulation was precisely. The Rambam mentions this. So halacha is of such an abstract nature, you see, that even Nevi'im, even prophets, were unable to conceive, to understand the ultimate abstract formulations. It becomes the area of halacha on the higher plane, on the higher sphere, is an extremely abstract study. But the reason why metaphysics is considered higher than halacha. Halacha is considered davar katan, as you know the Rambam says. But it is not because of a lack of its abstract nature. It's because it's a different kind of an area, you see. Now, with regard to the Yesodei Hadas, this is extremely, with regard to the Yesodei Hadas, what I want to say is as follows, that there is no question. The Torah was very, was given over to the Balei HaMasorah, and because of the fact, as I mentioned last week, there was avtacha given to us by God that the Torah will always continue, and that's why the science of halacha still exists to this very day. The Yesodei Hadas was certainly very carefully kept. And the Rambam, when he mentions 13 Ikarim, and there's a machlokas with a 13, whether it's 3, it's not a question of a particular area. Whether a particular area, you see, is true or not. For instance, if I boil them down to three karam, it's not a question of whether Trias HaMesim is true or not. It's not a question of whether Moshe's Nevuah is superseded by no other Nevuah. You see? No, that's not a question. Question is simply how you formulate the Yesod HaDas. And I think I one time gave a shiur in the Machlokas between the Rambam's formulation and between the Albo. Different formulations. But the basic principles of Yadas, Achdus Hashem, the oneness of God, the fact that God is indescribable, the fact that God has no physical qualities, I mean, these are not only built into the psukim, Eki Asher Eki, anyone that studies the psukim and the Chumash themselves, a little bit of understanding sees that these ideas are the main ideas of Yadas. As I mentioned last week, the idea that the heavens only reflect one thing, God's Chachma and nothing else, was known to us from Maamar Har Sinai at a time when everybody else was looking at the heavens, was projecting their own emotions onto the heavens. But the Torah told us in Devarim that the heavens only reflect one thing, God's Chachma. The attitude, the scientific attitude towards the whole of the universe was one that was given to us at Sinai. And it's part of the Yesod HaDas. This specific science was not developed. It was given over to man, developed in succeeding generations. But the fact that the heavens represent the source of God's knowledge and that the only approach to them is through man's Seichel, this was given to us at Sinai. The Baalei HaMasorah. If you study the Baalei HaMasorah, if you study Sad Yigoyin, you study, for instance, I mean, the not just the Mora, but if you study not the Maamar Trias HaMesim, I'm talking about the basic after Sad Yigoyin. Not the Kuzari, of course, but the Sefer, the Rambam's Chovos HaLevavos, for instance, the Chovos HaLevavos, all the Baalei HaMasorah, and in Chazal, it's found in Chazal, the basic principles of Yadus that are found in Chazal are not argued by any of the Baalei HaMasorah. You see, the basic principle of Schar V'Onesh is found throughout the Talmud by the greatest Chachamim. I don't think there is no one that denies Schar V'Onesh. The whole Torah is butled and mevutl if you deny Schar V'Onesh. That was Acher's concept. That's why Acher was considered outside the realm of the Baalei HaMasorah. He had erroneous ideas. No one denies Schar V'Onesh of any of the Baalei HaMasorah. So the main philosophical principles were guarded by our nation, and it very simply had to be that way. Without that, there is no system or any Masorah. If certain basic points are at question, if there's a question of whether God is physical or not, I mean, a question like that is of course impossible to be tolerated among the Baalei HaMasorah, and there is no such question. That's why whenever the Gemara talks about God in a physical, so to speak, manner, it says kavayochol, as if it was possible to say that. Il mole mikra kosavi efshalomrof. The Pasuk didn't say that God vayavar Hashem alpana vayikra. I wouldn't be able to say such a thing. It's only that the Pasuk says it to convey certain ideas to us. The Rambam points this out in the beginning of his Mora, and he shows you Unkelus, for instance. And all the Baalei HaMasorah, the basic principles of Yadus, were well guarded by the Baalei HaMasorah, just like the very halachic system was guarded by the Baalei HaMasorah. And that's why we have it to this day. There is no question about those ideas. There are details that are questioned, certain side points. What exactly is meant by Schar V'Onesh and what Schar V'Onesh entails, I'm not going to tell you, is a simple phenomenon, a simple thing. It is a difficult thing. It is a complex thing, because again, you're dealing with the workings of God. But that Schar V'Onesh does exist, that is not questioned by anyone. How exactly, precisely it works, even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand, because that's why he required he asked God, "Hodieni noas derochecha, show me your ways." Vayavar Hashem b'alpanav Hashem Hashem kel rachon v'chanun erech apayim v'chesed emes. The Yud Gimel Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was an understanding that Moshe Rabbeinu received of how God relates to this world, to humanity, in what manner, and that Moshe Rabbeinu himself couldn't conceive of before he received the Nevuah. So obviously, Schar V'Onesh is a very complex institution because it's part of God's Chachma. If we don't understand the physical universe that God created. Certainly, we don't understand things that stem from his very nature insofar as how he relates to man, but Moshe Rabbeinu received an understanding of this through a nevuah, which we don't have. But the fact that it exists is certainly the very basic, most basic premise of Yadus, and certainly is one of the Ikarim. As a matter of fact, I think Albo has it, that's one of the Ikarim, one of the three, if I'm not mistaken, Skyrunners. So what I'm trying to point out is that it is not simply a free-for-all when it comes to that area. The questions, once you get into the topics themselves, a deep understanding of the topic, certainly there are arguments on that point, because Yadus maintains that every individual, insofar as he is capable, and if he's on a proper level to investigate, is obligated to investigate and obligated to follow what his mind tells him. And that's why you have machlokas among Gedolei Yisrael. But with regard to the most basic principles, there is no question. In halacha, it's the same thing. That's why the Rambam, for instance, says there is never a machlokas whether shchitas habehema is from the neck or whether shchitas habehema is from the belly. See, there's no machlokas about that. There are machlokas in the details of the halacha, certainly. And there has to be such a thing, because it's a theoretical subject matter. And theoretics demands that each person investigate to the best of his ability with his mind and follow what his mind tells him. We're obligated to do that. But the basics of the system, there are no questions about the basics of the system that we have in the Masorah Misinai. And similarly with the Ikarim as well. You see. And this concept that the Rambam mentions, for instance, that a person should not follow his intuition with regard to establishing or understanding the basics of Yadus, but rather he must rely, as Sadi Goyen says, on the Masorah. And after the Masorah, his knowledge and his understanding, that is a correct principle. It's a pasuk v'lasorach acharei levavchem. It's a chazal. It's not open to question. You see, I think the Ravin has an article similar to this on certain basic premises that are, you know, you have to be able to distinguish between that which is a basic principle of Yadus and that which is open to debate. There are two different types of areas, you see. But the basics of Yadus, the basic principle, none of the Baalei Masorah argue on the basic principle of Schar V'Onesh, of Achdus Hashem. Yet there anybody arguing Achdus Hashem? There's no such... it's an impossibility. It's a pasuk in the Torah. You can't... The whole Torah points to that concept. Yes?
Going back
like this. That insofar as, and this I think Sadi Goyen mentioned, that insofar as a person uncovers a certain point of knowledge, and he finds that this point of knowledge is expressed in the Torah, but he has to know how to read the Torah. You see, you can't just have a person just taking the Torah and just using it to apply a certain idea. I mean, assuming the person is a legitimate scholar and he knows the method of approaching the Torah, and through his method of approaching the Torah he sees a certain concept, and then he sees through the study of reality, through the study of nature, he sees that this concept is supported. Certainly the assumption should be that this concept is correct. I mean, that he understands it. Yes, certainly. There shouldn't be any question about that. Right. Yeah, well, that of course, it is always possible for a person to be making an error. It's always possible there is nothing that can be definite. But we have to follow the method which is most probable to us in terms of knowledge. I mean, exactly all knowledge that man has is only knowledge of probability in terms of what is yes, but that certainly is considered. As a matter of fact, the Rambam in the Mora makes that point. He says the only philosophy that we should abide by is when a person investigates reality as an impartial thinker, and he arrives at a conclusion which, through the investigation of Torah, the same conclusion is brought about. But he has to be an impartial investigator and know how to investigate Torah, first of all, know how to investigate science in both areas. When there is a correspondence, certainly there is a person should assume that knowledge, insofar as human knowledge is concerned, is correct and must abide by that knowledge. Yes, absolutely. That is not considered a mere intuition. According to the Rambam, The way a person commits that lav would be of lo sorcha levafach reinechem, would be where a person sets himself up. You see, the Rambam makes it clear. I haven't read all of the Rambam here to you, but the Rambam makes it clear from his words that what he is saying is where a person sets himself up as the center of knowledge. In other words, he will determine what reality is, what the principles, philosophical principles are, based upon the way things appear to him and fit into his Weltanschauung, into his general sense of reality. See, there's a general sense of reality. For instance, if you will go to a primitive savage and you will show him a radio, he'll be astonished. He'll start attaching all kinds of fantasies to this phenomena. What's going on here? What is this? This magic coming out of a box. All these crazy ideas, which we consider to be crazy notions. See? Why? Because he has a certain Weltanschauung. He has a certain sense of reality. Now, a modern-day thinker, as you mentioned before, has a different sense of reality. And the most modern physicists have a different sense of reality than the previous generation, than the physicists from the Newtonian generation. So that sense keeps changing. Now, if a person will rely on that sense at any given time, and he will say, I am going to decide the principles of Yad is based upon that sense, that would be the love of the Lo Sasuru Acharei Levavcha. In other words, without showing a deference to the basic principles which we have received from Sinai, and simply by saying, I am in line with reality. The way things appear to me as sensible, that's what I am going to accept. And if it doesn't appear sensible to me, I will reject it. You see? So in other words, in his given level, he's going to determine philosophical principles. That, according to the Rambam, is v'losu achrei levavchem. That's why it says levavchem. Levavchem means the heart. The heart implies a certain attitude, certain emotional type of attitude, you see. And that would be the love, according to the Rambam. A physicist naturally uses his intuition. I mean, they say that Albert Einstein, when he had a question, he would say, let me think, if I was God, how would I work this out? That was his approach. Which means to say that obviously he had a tremendously high level of intuition when it came to the world of physics. And that's the correct approach, the only approach that an investigator could use, because there are millions of phenomena that he's bombarded with. And to isolate the phenomena requires a certain intuition, a certain sense that this is where it is. You see, just like in halacha, when a person has a question, the Rav one time mentioned that when Rav Chaim heard a question, he immediately knew where to go, because his sense of intuition in halacha was so great that he could tell right away where the answer is going to come from. Just like a great scientist can tell through his intuition where in the answer lies, which phenomena to check, to observe, what to look for. You see, that's an intuition, scientific intuition. That's fine when it comes to scientific knowledge. But to use that sense with regard, in relationship to God, in relationship to how God works, or how he runs this world, or principles in relationship to the knowledge of God, that is the love. That would be the love. That would be overstepping his bounds. You see, and it's rational to see why it would, because his intuition is brought about by his exposure to the knowledge of his times. But this knowledge is inherently limited and certainly can't go beyond the physical universe, because that's what he's studying, the physical universe. Now, in metaphysics, you're going beyond. You're talking about God, which is beyond. He has no area. He has never been exposed to such a type of a thing, you see. I one time gave an example that the concept of God's existence and is not being physical is a concept which is not something which sits comfortably with a person, for a simple reason that he has never, his concept of existence is always inherently tied to something which is physical. If, for instance, if there was no such thing as inanimate life, inanimate objects, if everything was animate, So everything that we ever saw in our lives would be moving, would have a partake of motion, would have life. Okay, we don't know what life is exactly, but whatever it is, if something strikes us based on certain criteria, we're going to call certain things living, certain things animate, certain things inanimate. Okay, now if everything that we were exposed to was animate, we would have a hard time imagining something which is physical and yet inanimate, because we simply were not exposed to it. Now in our realm of perception, we only perceive things which are of a physical nature to have existence. So when we speak of existence without physical, we're immediately caught in something which is unfamiliar to us and which sounds to us as mind-boggling, you see. But Yadus demands that we make that we accept that as being correct based upon Nivoah. But if it would be based upon a person's natural intuition, say no. Yes. A person is obligated to know the 13 principles. It's interesting. I one time heard someone say that why does the Rambam say that if you deny one of the 13 Ikarim, you see that he's a kofar. But if you deny even one word of the Torah, you're also a kofar. Yeah, but the answer was given that I don't have to know every word in the Torah, but I must know all the Gimel Ikarim. That is true. You must know the Ikarim. But another answer is that the only reason that I know that a denial of one word of Torah is because one of the Ikarim. How is one of the Ikarim? If it wasn't one of the Ikarim, I wouldn't know it. But the truth is that you must know. There is a chiyuv in everyone to know the Ikarim. A person should study the Ikarim. There's no question about it. I think it's very wrong that in our generation we find that people don't study the Ikarim. Even in yeshivas, the time is not taken out to study the Ikarim. It's extremely important. Perhaps they feel that they don't really understand them philosophically in a very in-depth way, so they avoid them. But the point is, on every level, it's important that a person should know what the basic Ikarim are. I mean, hopefully as he gains knowledge, he can understand them deeper. There's a tremendous amount of depth in the Ikarim. There's no question about it. The Torah isn't deficient in any area. There's just like there's depth in the Tosfos, there's depth in the Ikarim. Even to a greater degree, the Rambam explains. But unfortunately today, this is not done on a very wide scale. Yes?
Since we have
assume, even it's a good point, even if he should assume Torah and Shemayim, even if he says, yes, Torah and Shemayim. But if it's based upon that, then he's over the law. Yes? I mean, there's no question about it. It is a process of searching which the greatest person is involved in. That's why the Rambam and the Mora himself mentions that he had certain unresolved questions. But the only thing is, there is a difference between a scholar who knows the area that is unresolved and knows how to approach the area and which area he is weak in. That's extremely important to know where the person is belongs, what he should approach and what he shouldn't, and where the questions lie. That's a difficult thing. But that process of searching, I mean, the Pasuk says, Hashem and Hashemayim Hibit, God looks down from the heavens to see if there is a person that's Doresh Elokim, that is searching for God. So you see that that is the highest level, the search. But the searching for God doesn't just mean a person is questioning, is there a God, is not a God. It means that he's involved in a certain process, but he's involved in a certain framework. The framework is the framework that's given at Sinai. But that framework, within that framework, there's a tremendous amount of searching and understanding and knowledge which man is always in the process of gaining. Even the greatest scholar, even the Rambam himself, recognized his own deficiencies when it came to those areas. Every person is deficient. No one in Yadis, no one arrives at a final level. Except perhaps in certain areas, like the Rambam mentions with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu. He seems to indicate that Moshe Rabbeinu did arrive at certain definite knowledge. But anyone short of Moshe Rabbeinu, so says, leave that for Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not for us. Yes? One time mentioned where the Rambam says if a goy should say that he accepts the seven mitzvahs of Noach, the Noachite code. But he accepts them because of Hechar Hadas, the Rambam says. It seems, what is Hechar Hadas? It means it seems probable to him that those things make sense. There's seven laws that make sense, and he accepts them. The Rambam says this person is not a chacham. Why? Because his acceptance of them is simply based on his own intuition. That's not considered an acceptance. That means what he likes is he accepts, what he dislikes is. If it's based upon the fact that he recognizes that it is part of a system of Yadis of Torah Misinai, then it's a valid acceptance. Otherwise, it's not valid. Yes. The Rambam seems to say where it becomes highly conjectural that there man should assume that one of the critiques of Aristotle was that Aristotle, in areas where he knew it was, he didn't have sound knowledge, nevertheless was more certain than he should have been. The Rambam considers Aristotle a great chacham, don't get me wrong, but he still felt that in certain areas he was more sure than he should have been based upon the knowledge that he had available to him. I just want to conclude with one point. Yes, I'm sorry. Sure, absolutely. What Avraham arrived at, the conclusion Avraham arrived at, was the God of Israel. That conclusion he arrived at on his own. That there is a God that is non-material, non-physical, an abstract God that's behind all the chachma in the universe, and that man should abide by what God, what he sees, insofar as following God, insofar as emulating God, but not by the projection of his own emotions. That was the basic thing against the Avodah Zarah. Because Avodah Zarah is simply regression into infantile emotionalism. And Avraham Avinu was against it. That's basically, that's right. But other ideas of God, higher knowledge was only received by Avraham Avinu through Nevuah. Without Nevuah, Avraham Avinu wouldn't receive certain knowledge of God. Would not receive it.
And he might not have even gotten
the parallel to Anna. The only time, that's it. The certainly with regard to mitzvos, he wouldn't have understood certain things without revelation, without the Nevuah. Man can only reach a certain point without Nevuah. He needs Nevuah. Nevuah is a necessity for man, because the information that he needs can only be received through Nevuah. If he doesn't have that information, then he's in trouble. So therefore, that's why you have to have a system of Masorah and Yadis. Yes.
What you're saying is awesome.
I just read a book recently. The name of the book is God and the New Physics. So the person, I'm not qualified to pass judgment about his knowledge of physics, but I would say one thing: his knowledge of God was so infantile that it was like a book that was. Completely, it was written on two subjects, and one subject, the man had no basic. His basic notions were crazy. So, the thing to remember is that science is a legitimate area of investigation. On the contrary, it is this is the first to recognize that all the chachmas Hashem is reflected in God's creation. And it's incumbent upon us to understand it and to see God's greatness through the creation. It's incumbent. It's a legitimate area of investigation. It's a mitzvah. But insofar as a person making the mistake of assuming, not differentiating between one area and another, that is a serious error. I just want to close with one more point. The point I want to make was like this. I spoke about the abstractness of Talmud. And what I want to conclude with is something I hinted to last week, that in the very approach of Talmud, which has its own method of reasoning, and its own system, it's a science within its own orbit, so to speak, has its own approach. But even within that approach, even though it deals basically with halacha is not physics, halacha is a different area. But in the process of dealing with the halachic phenomena, there's a certain type of reasoning that's used. A certain type of reasoning that's used. Those who study halacha, of course, know what it is. I mean, you have to become familiar with it. You have to learn it, just like any other area. But what I want to say is that even within that science, that study, there lies a certain method. And this method has got to be, must play an important role in a general Weltanschauung. Philosophical Weltanschauung, because it deals with a certain type of epistemology. You see, epistemology is a study of knowledge itself. Now, since Talmud was given to us by God, so the type of thinking and the process and the approach reflects God's thought. Therefore, what I wish to say is that it would seem that, insofar as the ultimate uncovering of knowledge, of human knowledge, in the future, that Talmud itself will play a role
insofar as its methodology and insofar as it shows us something about how man should perceive God's thoughts, you see. And its abstract nature. Its abstract nature itself is an epistemological phenomena, you see. And that's why I wanted to mention that the Rav has this concept in his halachic mind. In the end of the book, he mentions this. He says, to this end, there is only a single source from which a Jewish philosophical Weltanschauung could emerge. The objective order, the halacha. In passing onward from the halacha and other objective constructs to a limitless subjective flux, we might possibly penetrate the basic structure of our religious consciousness. We might also evolve cognitive tendencies and aspects of our world interpretation and gradually grasp the mysteries of the religious halachic act. Problems of freedom, causality, God-man relationship, creation, and nihility would be illuminated by halachic principles. A new light could be shed on our apprehension of reality. The halachic compass would also guide us through the lanes of medieval philosophy and reveal structural standards by which to judge and evaluate the philosophical thought of that golden age. It would help us discriminate between the living and the dead in Jewish philosophy. What, for instance, is of halachic nature in the Guide and the Kuzari, and what merely an echo of Platonic Aristotelian philosophy? The purpose of such an analysis is not to eliminate non-Jewish elements. Far from it, for the blend of Greek and Jewish thought has oftentimes been truly magnificent. However, by tracing the Jewish trends and comparing them to the non-Jewish, we shall enrich our outlook and knowledge. Modern Jewish philosophy must be nurtured on the historical religious consciousness that has been projected onto a fixed objective screen. And his last sentence is, out of the sources of halacha, a new world view awaits formulation. You see. So basically, this concept is definitely one which is tied in to the ideas of the Yesod Hadas. Namely, that in halacha was revealed to us not just a specific study, but also an epistemology. And that's why it's important that a person become a Talmud Chacham and understand to the utmost of his ability the abstract halachic formulations, so that he should be able to use those as a guideline in understanding not just halacha, but all of reality.
You're right. The only point I wanted to add is that the danger of Lo Surcha Levavchem is greatest, of course, when a person starts investigating an area because he senses a certain emotional attachment to that area. In other words, many times you find a person will look into a specific philosophical area. He's attracted to that area. The reason he's attracted to that area is usually not because that is the next area in the line of progress of his development. It's usually because he has some emotions in that area. Definitely a person should not investigate in that area if that is the case, because that means that that would be Lo Surcha Levavchem. He's going there because his emotions are attracted to the area. It's not because it's the next level of investigation that's in line with his natural progress, you see. That's why the Rama mentions in the Mora, like he didn't want, even with his Talmud, he didn't want to tell him things in advance. He wanted him to develop naturally, you see. So the areas of study should not be in accordance to how the things bother us, disturb us. That's not a barometer. The conscious is a barometer to veer away from it, you see. It should be in accordance with the natural progress of knowledge.
There are different people attracted to things allergic to them.
The Rambam that we did last week, the Rambam Hilchos Avodas Chachamim, where the Rambam says that a person is not allowed to think. He's not allowed to think. Again, he's not permitted to entertain certain ideas. Now here, of course, you have a problem. What restricts a person